The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
JP McMahon, the chef, the restaurateur and the author, has a new book out. It's called An Irish Food Story, 100 Foods That Made Us. JP.
How are you, Kieran?
You're either a monster or you've never seen the cartoon Puffin Rock. Which one is it?
I must be a monster, yeah.
Because you've seen it.
No.
And you still wanted to eat a puffin.
Puffin. No, sorry. I'd still like to eat a puffin.
Oh, God.
We used to eat them all the time. Maybe a swan. Like, no, I'm joking. Someone asked me how they'd cook a swan once, and I said, you could wrap it in seaweed and put it in a bullock feed.
Someone actually genuinely wanted to know, how do I cook a swan?
Yeah, someone was saying, did they ever eat them? And actually, the reason why we don't eat swans is because our ovens aren't big enough, like, historically. And that's why the turkey took that. And also, it takes ages for swans. Children to get bigger. Well, not children, but the turkey is just, unluckily, what could fit in the oven, and it's in 6 months they can grow, and swans just take too long to grow.
Cygnet,
that's it.
Yeah.
So, and they're too cute. The cuteness factor, like they eat puffins in Iceland, and they're like a sea pigeon. Like,
yeah.
A cute sea pigeon.
Do you know where the word name cygnet comes from?
No.
It's like, there's a story from ancient Greek myth where the son of Apollo or Ares was in love with this other guy called Cygnus, and Apollo was having none of it and had the guy turned into a swan.
Oh.
And that's where the name Cygnet comes from.
Oh.
And then he kind of made him mute.
Yeah.
And then just as he was about to die, he kind of felt bad about it, so he gave him his voice back so he could kind of call out once before he died, and that was his swan song.
Ah, well, there you go.
There you go.
I like those little things.
Well, you see, your book is full of little things like
actually,
that.
It is, actually. The words and why we call things, and it's always interesting to me. And it's a nice way to get into food, because you're often just eating it on a daily basis and you never really think about it, and you're going, why do we call, I don't know. I remember doing one on asparagus, and it's spear grass because it looks like a spear that comes up out of the grass, and that's very normal. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And now it's called asparagus. And so, like, loads of other little bits by that. So, but the book, it was fun writing it, because from the one point of view, there's a serious side, and we're trying to look at Irish food and its story and trying to reclaim it. And the other side, there's loads of things that we don't want to acknowledge, like crispy pancakes and Angel Delight and
Angel
Breakfast
Delight.
Roll.
That's the very first entry. I should say, maybe people are expecting a cookbook. It's not a cookbook. It's kind of,
there's no recipes whatsoever. There might be one little spot, just in case someone buys it and go, there was no recipes in that book.
You give instruction of how to cook in hay.
Yeah, that's one of them. And I think there might be a little instruction on how to dress an oyster.
Okay,
something like that. And cooking in hay is, like, that's probably not a very practical one.
No, unless, have you tried it?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, we use hay all the time in the restaurant. It's an amazing flavor. Like if you make a hay broth, or you make a hay oil, or you burn it and just use the smoke. Oh, it's hay is like
what kind of flavor?
Kind of, I know you're killing me now, grassy, kind of smoky. Yeah. No, it's like a dry, do you know what? It's not a million miles away from dried thyme.
Okay.
Like somewhere in and around that. And but I remember once there was a farmer in the restaurant, and he asked me what type of hay it was. And I was like, it's hay, hay.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, there's two major types. And I can't remember what the two major types is. I think one was meadow hay and there was another one.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was just like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, no, it's just hay. I get it in the pet shop. And it's
that
great.
Where you get it?
That's where I get it, yeah.
The hay you get for the lining.
Hay,
you're like,
it used to be €10 bag. It's probably a bit more expensive now, but it's really good hay.
Nothing has been safe from inflation.
Nothing. No, no, it's probably €15 bag now. But if you hay smoke chicken, if you have a little smoker and hay smoked chicken, it is the best thing ever. Put that in your sandwich.
That's one of the few recipes, yeah. So it's mostly kind of the story of food, the story of us and Irish identity and cuisine and a lot of things.
And trying to find an identity and saying, well, we don't have an Irish food story. And like every culture has a story. And it just depends if it was written or when it was written. And if you were the victors in the colonization or the imperial world. I mean, we all know that France and Spain and Italy have great food stories, and China has an amazing food story, India, all these countries. And like, there is a story because people have always been eating in Ireland. And I mentioned it in the book, a friend of mine who passed away, Jacques Onfillow, who's an Australian, I'm a Scottish chef, but based in Australia. And he was very interested in Aboriginal food. And he said, like a lot of people said, well, do you know what? Like they just kind of got by. And And then he said, well, they were there 40,000 years. Like, you don't just get by for 40,000 years. He goes, there must be something there. And just because it wasn't written down. And so we have a lot of that where, like, the oldest recipe book in Ireland is about the 1660 something. That is the oldest recipe book. So that means only 300 or 400 years we have recipes. And then before that, you got the written word, you get the odd mention of food in poems and poems and maybe a play or maybe a piece of literature. And then before that, it's all archaeology.
Like, yeah.
Once you go back beyond 700 AD, it's only archaeology.
Yeah.
And but there is, and you've got a conjecture, and sometimes
the Forgotofia thing, there's a lot of conjecture there.
Yeah, a lot.
You talk about
you could,
that.
Like, and I joke about it that you could literally have a bath, brew a beer, and then make some food.
Yeah.
And,
exactly,
and it was a kind of multi-purpose space. But the bacteria probably helped the beer get going, the yeast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, they still don't know. And even there's another book, I think Irish Food Companion, huge big book that just came out recently. Martin McNamara did it with Dorothy Keishman, and they're one of the archaeologists who writes the first essay. It's sometimes archaeologists are very, very careful because they can only go on the evidence, whereas I'm a chef and I can go, do you know what, the seaweed there, the people ate seaweed in Chile, we know that 40,000 years ago. So if there was seaweed in Ireland 10,000 years ago, people ate it. And then you can surmise. Whereas you have to be very careful as an archaeologist. You can't just say, ah, yeah, they ate it, because you need evidence. And if you find some fish bones, you can go, ah, yeah, they're probably eating fish. Whereas he might say, well, maybe there was just a few fish eaten. And we have, unfortunately, for better or worse, been in love with the cows for thousands and thousands of years, and we are like a people of the land, and that's why we have weird attitudes towards the sea and seaweed and fish. And like, nearly as far back as the agricultural revolution, like 5000 BC, something like that, like 7000 years ago, like, cows were the main thing, and then pigs, and then sheep, and then on and on and on, and then maybe a bit of fish and maybe a bit of seaweed. But like, the cow was king, I think.
Yeah, isn't it? And it's still so much the case. It's funny, isn't
absolutely.
It? I was playing tennis last week, and a guy, after we played, hadn't said a word to him, French guy, came up to me, shaking hands over the net, and he says, "You love cheese."
Yeah.
And he said, and he turns out he works for Sheridan's Cheesemongers.
Yes.
And he listens to the show, but that was his, he goes, "You love cheese, and you love milk." And it's in Ireland as well, the seafood thing. If you go 20 minutes inland from the coast, people say, "Oh no, you've got to be able to see the sea
on your summer
to get
holidays,
good seafood,
having a fish and chips." And that's not the case. Yeah. That probably was the case a couple of hundred years ago. But
if you live a couple of hours inland from either the east or west coast in Canada, you're probably getting fresh seafood.
Yeah. And people only, if you're in Offaly, you're 1 hour from the coast.
Yes, and that's, they would consider that
the furthest
coast
inland you can get before you start getting back to the coast of Galway.
Yeah.
So we are very, and there is, I suppose there is, I did a fish class last night, and one of the people in the class said, "Geez, I've never ordered fish in a restaurant, you know, it's just not substantial enough." And and I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" And they're like, "Oh, you need beef, you need a bit of meat." And we're, unfortunately, we still fall victim to that.
Yeah.
And even when I'm like, generally, if I'm getting fish, I'd probably go to the fishmongers. But if you're wandering around the supermarket, you're just making sure, the beef will be ground there. Get the beef, get the pork, get the chicken, whatever else. Fish, I better go to the fishmonger. You know, just like, and it is, it's, we have a strange, bizarre attitude, and it is getting better. I mean, we have loads and loads of kids now, whom I know, like nephews and nieces, and not my own, unfortunately, that love shellfish and mussels. And my two are just like, "Oh, get away from me."
Really?
Oh yeah, they're awful.
My kids would live on fish cake.
Okay.
They could. It's all they would eat.
And but like, fresh ones or ones out of the freezer?
No, out of the freezer.
All
they want.
My two are just literally living out of the freezer at the moment, and it's just like chicken pizzas, and they're trying to get a fresh vegetable into them. It's just not good.
Sneak it in while the mouths are just shoving it in so quickly.
The 15-year-old, I can't remember the last time she had a piece of fruit. She says Capri Sun, that's orange, and I was like, that's not exactly the orange.
There's vitamin C somewhere.
Exactly.
In there.
So do you know what I said? If there's vitamins in it, it's grand.
Yeah, that counts. Yeah. I'm with her. But so the book, like, it's full of kind of stuff like that, talking about seaweed and swans and Forgotofias. But there is the Angel Delight stuff you mentioned,
and
which I've never had.
Pancakes and
yes,
and I thought that
jambons
and loads of And it was very interesting researching them, because normally when you research things, it's very serious. And I thought it was very funny was researching the spice bag and looking up articles written on spice bags and who had mentioned it first and where it came from. And like the origins of anything are interesting.
Yeah.
Or interesting to me. And I think the Findus crispy pancake was very interesting again. And I hadn't even realised, because I suppose for me, they're always there. But after the horse meat scandal, Findus collapsed completely. And I think like their lasagna range was full, 100% horse, and while like you can still get crispy pancakes, it's like the brand was dissolved. It's kind of, and then it was just kind of came back at a different name.
Yeah.
So and there is still crispy pancakes, and I don't know what they're called now. They're something crispy pancakes, but it is just interesting in relation to that. Something we grew up with, and we thought they were the best thing ever because
yeah.
like, they weren't like meat and two veg. And when we were in my grandparents. In Stillorgan or Bray, and it was always like if you got anything frozen, anything from the frozen department was amazing. It was
yeah.
just like colourful, and like of course that everyone was saying now they're all ultra processed and blah blah blah. But there is I'd be afraid to eat one now because I'd be all nostalgia. I was thinking yeah. I'd make one. I think Paul Flynn made one for the Today Show one day, and like they're hard. Like they take a while to make because you have to make filling,
yeah.
Stuff the pancake, seal the pancake, leave it again, bread the pancake. It would ruin it for me.
But there was one entry, and I assumed it, like that it was going to be kind of a tale of you know, modern Ireland and kind of the evolution of cuisine. And it's saffron. Saffron's been around forever
for
here.
A couple of hundred years. Yeah. And the first thing, of course, it's like very, very Irish. What to do with saffron? We don't make a saffron porridge. We dye our clothes with it.
Yeah.
And say, I think tea as well. People used to use tea to dye their clothes. And then someone might have said, geez, we might drink that. And same with saffron. And I think about the 19th century, saffron buns were very popular. And they also, I think they're seemingly from Cornwall. But around that, they're a little kind of curled bun with a raisin on it. So it is interesting for me the ways in which I suppose most of our attitudes towards food very much come out of the 50s. Like, and even for all of us, we're kind of like, oh, geez, Irish food is so dreary and so X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But it is pretty, maybe the 30s to the 50s. And if you go back into the 19th century and Ireland was part of the British Empire, everything was here. Like there was Parmesan, I have a sherry menu coming in 1899, and it's all the same sherries we have now. And,
yeah.
and we kind of, because we had this struggle for a kind of self-governance in between the 30s and the 50s, we kind of cut off everything. And then all of the different cheeses that might have been here, the Bries and the Blues.
But also the post-independence narrative became one that of pre-independence, we all were in a kind of a hovel eating just potatoes.
Yeah.
And it was the Brits' fault.
Yeah.
And I'm not acknowledging the reality of that, you know, in large parts of the country. But it was, but that narrative didn't allow for what was also the reality, that there were saffron buns.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it would, to a certain degree as well, that the big house tradition, which is where all of the recipe books come out of from 1650 onwards,
yeah.
we were like, that's not us. That's the Anglo-Irish, that's the Brits. They're not Irish people. We eat meat and potatoes and we have a bad relationship with fish. Like, that's it. And I think that's not the truth. And if you go back historically to different waves of immigrants like the Normans or the Vikings, or then you've the Celtic people. And then before that, we don't, like, the irony is for 8,000 years, we don't even know who was here. They were just people. And eventually they became Irish people. But I mean, that's really about 500 BC. So it's about 8,500 years where there's people here and they're eating. And they probably didn't even call themselves Irish. They were probably all fighting with each other and probably just call themselves after the place they're in. Like, and that's one of the ironies as well. We're all too busy beating each other up. And then the English come over and said, we might as well take over this place because they're all preoccupied with killing each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah. And I don't know.
Many people then willing to make quick alliances with those dastardly Brits.
100%. But I do think, like,
anything to beat Tip.
Anything to beat Tip. But I do think the narrative from definitely from the 90s on changed in relation to how we saw ourselves. And I think that takes in the breakfast oils and jambons, but it also takes in seaweed and the, I suppose, our interest in wild food, which very much kind of begins in the 70s with different, kind of almost like it comes out of the counter-cultural revolution.
Yeah.
You get people writing about wild food. I think the first book, it's 1978 in Ireland, and about how you could self-sufficiency and all that. And it's kind of funny that that's all coming back now, you know.
An Irish food story. 100 Foods That Made Us by JP McMahon. JP, thanks a million.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.